Thank you. Be seated.
The court is ready to hear oral argument in the State of Texas versus Malone Service Company and others.
May it please the court, Mr. Brian Berwick will present argument for the petitioner. He has reserved 5 minutes of the vote.
May it please the court, my name is Brian Berwick. I'm an Assistant Attorney General with the Environmental Protection Division of the Texas Attorney General's Office. This is a big case to the Environmental Protection Division and to its agency client, the Texas Water Commission. This is the best case that I've ever done, indeed the best case I've ever seen, indeed the best case probably that I can imagine. The jury, after a 2-week trial in this environmental enforcement case, which was primarily under the Texas Injection Well Act, found 418 violations against Malone Service Company and the same number against its president, Arthur Malone, and 44 violations against a middle management person, Larry Malone. The jury found that under the Texas Injection Well Act, the maximum civil penalty should be assessed of $5,000 for each of the violations against Malone Service Company. Lesser penalties were assessed against Arthur Malone and against Larry Malone. Two defenses went to the jury. One was the defense of discriminatory enforcement. The jury rejected both of the defenses. This case today primarily concerns the Malones' contention that evidence relevant to their discriminatory enforcement defense was improperly excluded by the trial court.
And do I understand, Mr. Berwick, you concede that there is such a defense, that common law in Texas?
Reluctantly, I concede it, Your Honor. I know there are 8 or 10 Court of Appeals and Court of Civil Appeals cases that speak about the discriminatory enforcement defense that refer to the federal law of discriminatory enforcement that has developed in federal courts, including out of the Yickwo versus Hopkins case. I will say that the Texas law of discriminatory enforcement, as it has been developed primarily in these Court of Appeals and Court of Civil Appeals Sunday closing law cases, diverges from the strict federal pattern. The strict federal pattern, as best I understand it, would require that a suspect class of some kind be allegedly discriminated against. That's the Yickwo pattern. But under Texas law, as these blue law cases have grown up in the lower courts, it appears that something else, some kind of lesser requirement is all that's required. And accordingly, while I'm not crazy about the law, I suppose the defense does exist.
In considering the question of the evidentiary question that we have here, are we called upon or should we also be looking at that defense as it relates to the evidence and specifically to the case the County and District Attorneys Association refers to, the Super X Drugs case, a no writ case, which does appear to diverge with respect to the stricter federal standard?
Yes, Your Honor. I would certainly like it if the court would look into that.
And the blue law cases, of course, have a primary component of that was private enforcement, private attorney general section. But there's none of that in this under this particular law.
I'm sorry, Your Honor. I missed the last part of your question.
About the blue law cases?
Yes, sir.
There is. Some of the case law grew up around the fact that there was a private attorney general section there.
Yes, sir, that's
there
right.
There's no corresponding section under the Injection Act.
Under the Texas Injection Well Act, that's true. There's no citizen suit. Only the government can do it. That is correct. Yes, Your Honor.
Did you object to the issue on discriminatory enforcement in the trial court?
Did I object?
Did the state?
I believe I did have some objections. Ultimately, of course, the jury favored me, and those objections were academic. I'll honestly say I forget what my objections were.
Well, I guess what I want to know is whether any objection to the availability of that defense was preserved, and did you object on the basis that there was no such defense?
I did not, nor did I bring forth as a point of error a cross point, because it was the Malones who were appealing. The the denial by the district court before trial of my motion for summary judgment or motion for partial summary judgment on the subject of discriminatory enforcement. My basic idea in that motion was that they had the burden of showing that others similarly situated were not generally enforced against. And I said in my motion for summary judgment that as a matter of law, the fact that the Water Commission had done hundreds and hundreds of enforcements showed general enforcement. But I did not assign that. Frankly, I did not procedurally think of even research the question of whether having won on the jury issue that went to the jury, I could assign that as a cross point. It, frankly, I just didn't do it. Nevertheless,
So that if discriminatory enforcement was properly submitted, what we really come down to here is what evidence is properly admissible and the weight to be given to that evidence as it applies to the defense of discriminatory enforcement.
I certainly think that is the basic issue in this case, yes, Your Honor. Although the weight aspect of it, well, I'm simply arguing, first of all, that it should be excluded, period, and that really as a matter of public policy, other people's penalties should not be allowed into evidence in a case like this one.
Well, how can you have the defense and not allow them to prove it?
Well, Your Honor, if they contend that we concede them a defense but then cut off their evidence, their proof of the defense, that is somewhat question-based because the question is, does the evidence that they complain of the exclusion of in fact bear on the defense of discriminatory enforcement?
But isn't that up to the fact finder to decide?
It is on proper evidence, Your Honor, but we say that other people's penalties are simply irrelevant to the defense of discriminatory enforcement.
Well, if you showed that a whole bunch of people didn't get punished at all and a very few people did, wouldn't that be evidence of discriminatory enforcement?
It would, but only if you, I contend, only if you show it in a proper way, through proper evidence, as they were allowed to do and as they did, by showing, Your Honor, that other people similarly situated, which I doubt they proved, but they may have in some instances, other people similarly situated were not generally enforced against in the sense, and this is the rule that I contend for, in the sense that either no enforcement was initiated against them at all, or that enforcement was not advanced past some recognized enforcement threshold. The question, once those facts are brought out, of what our track record was, what our record of achievement was in achieving penalties, either administratively within the Water Commission or through judicial proceedings, that, we say, is irrelevant, and it has to be irrelevant.
But you characterize it as record of achievement. They characterize it as record of discrimination. Doesn't the fact finder have to decide that?
I contend not, Your Honor. I contend that evidence must be cut off at the pass, that evidence of other people's penalties is, as a matter of law, simply irrelevant to any question under the discriminatory enforcement defense, and that only initiation of enforcement and advancement past recognized thresholds should be regarded as being relevant. And they've got lots of that evidence.
Well, why? Why? What sense does that make to let in part of the story but not all of it?
Primarily it is this, Your Honor, that when we file a lawsuit at the behest of our agency client, we have to file it in a court. Up to the moment, perhaps, of the referral from the client to us, the client has control over it. When they refer it to us, they lose one measure of control because, as the case law says, the Attorney General controls the litigation. When we sue in court, we and they lose another critical measure of control. It's before a tribunal. The question no longer becomes, if it ever were the motivation of the Texas Water Commission to victimize these people, which is ridiculous, but it no longer becomes, if it ever were that question, how hard shall the Texas Water Commission hit them? The question becomes, or even how hard shall the Office of Attorney General hit them? The question becomes, what do we think we can get from this tribunal? What do we think we can win from a judge and jury? That is the factor, that loss of control factor, is what differentiates this additional evidence that they would like to bring in. But incidentally,
that's what you say. They say, but you also have a choice in how vigorously you pursue it, which you obviously, being in control of the litigation, do.
The Attorney General's office.
And isn't that a question for the fact finder side, that whether you vigorously pursued it or whether and got the best you could, or whether you just kind of said, well, this is not important, let's just let this one go. It could be either way, logically.
I contend not. I contend that logically and as a matter of policy, our level of success against other people in the past, in terms of the amount of penalties we got, the dollars that we got, either administratively, and the Texas Water Commission has an administrative in-house option, or through judicial remedies, should be screened out.
Mr. Berg, I'm glad you got into that, because this statute is unique, as I understand it, in Texas administrative law. This is the only one where you go straight from the agency to the courthouse. You don't have an internal administrative hearing process where the agency makes fact findings from which a substantial evidence review is taken to the district court, but rather you go straight from the agency to the courthouse where you operate under a de novo trial, don't you?
I think not. It's terrible that I could be ignorant about this, but I fear that I am and may have to supply the court with information after the argument. My belief is that under the Texas Injection Well Act, as under the Texas Solid Waste Disposal Act, as under the Texas Clean Water Act and the Texas Clean Air Act, that there is an internal administrative option for the agency to enforce under.
Does that include hearing officers like?
Yes, sir.
Texas Education Agency has, and
they have
Public
their,
Utilities Commission.
Yes, sir. The Water Commission has its own corps of hearing officers who give a contested case hearing with compulsory process, with cross-examination of witnesses, with the full panoply of due process. So I believe
was
the
was that done in this case?
Sir?
Was that done in this case?
No. Instead, as with all of the environmental statutes, the agency chose the option of coming directly to us and asking us to go to court.
And that's at your option?
No, sir. That's at their option. They either decide to do it in-house, giving due process, or they decide to refer it to us, in which case we take it to court.
It's the option of the state acting through its agency or the Attorney General's office, and not the option of the industry complained against.
Very true, yes, sir. Very true. Of course, our basic concern about this civil penalty evidence possibly coming in, and this sets aside the Malone's views about discriminatory enforcement, is that each case should stand upon its own bottom. The analogy that I like to make is very simple, that this jury should no more be told what we have achieved in terms of civil penalties against other companies in the past, unrelated companies, than a jury in a back case should be told what other back plaintiffs have won. Another good analogy is with workers' comp, even when it's a single company. The company should not be skewered with evidence of what it settled with other people in the past for.
And but that's quite different from a situation where the agency is proceeding.
Yes, sir, because the agency is a unitary enforcer and enforces against a lot of companies. And therefore, the defense exists, and they're allowed to prove, as they did prove, that against a particular company, for example, the agency only chose the in-house enforcement option. But against Malone Service Company, instead, the agency chose to come to court. That's what I would call a threshold of enforcement. And I contend that that is perfectly okay. They're allowed to try to prove that all day long. However, penalties we've won in the past, most of them through settlement, should not come into evidence. Among other things, they would conflict with the policy of Rule 408 of the Texas Rules of Civil Evidence. The basic policy of that rule is to exclude evidence of compromises as it might bear upon liability or upon the invalidity of the plan. And in addition, if evidence of our past settlements, and 99% of the cases, both administratively and judicially, that have been concluded by the Texas Water Commission across its history, and that's hundreds and hundreds of cases, 99% or more are settled. Very, very few actually go to trials or to a contested proceeding.
Does the record reflect whether there were settlement discussions in this case?
It does not, Your Honor. There were, and that makes a good point. If our settlements with others in the past, or if the agency's settlements with others in the past, were to be allowed into evidence by showing the dollar amounts of civil penalties that we held out for or that we didn't hold out for or caved in for, if those were to come into evidence, surely that would open up the question of our settlement discussions with them alone, which would violate a long tradition.
By the same token, if you settle with others and refuse to settle with them, that might show discrimination.
I contend not, Your Honor. In the law, that just cannot be. We didn't settle with them because we had a darn good case against them. We wanted to go to the jury and get a big hit. Thank you.
Any other questions? Thank you, counsel. The court is ready to hear argument from respondents.
May it please the court, Jacqueline Scott will present argument for respondents.
Good morning. Thank you. May it please the court, Mr. Berwick, I am joined here today on behalf of the respondents, Malone Service Company, Larry Malone and Arthur Malone, by my associate Tom Billick, also of the Houston office of Wilshire Scott and Dyer. I think the court's questions this morning have indicated a very good understanding that the issue presently before this court is extremely narrow and extremely fact-specific. The only issue, as I understand it, that is before this court is, did the 14th Court of Appeals err in an opinion written by Chief Justice Curtis Brown that the trial court erred in excluding what the Court of Appeals called very persuasive evidence as to the existence and amount of civil penalties constituting discriminatory enforcement by the government against the Malones? Did the court
what is the basis, you allege, of the discrimination?
The basis of the alleged discrimination is multiple. Number one, we established, I believe, in the record that there is an entity known as the Gulf Coast Waste Authority that was created under the Constitution of Texas by the Texas Legislature that is within the same geographical confines as the Malone Service Company and is a direct competitor of Malone Service Company. They also testified in this trial that it was within their authority and their purpose to acquire every waste treatment facility plant in this area, including Malone Service Company. We contended that the basis of the discriminatory enforcement by the state and the government in this case was to facilitate the ability of Gulf Coast Waste Authority to basically put the Malones out of business. And we believe that the evidence was very substantial and very compelling on this point, with the exception of the very two important pieces of evidence that the trial court wrongfully excluded, with which the Court of Appeals agreed. And I think it's also important to point out that the court found not only that the excluded evidence was material to our defense of discriminatory enforcement, but that the evidence as admitted with all of these penalty amounts, which the court can see are 90% of them zeros, redacting those penalty amounts, the Court of Appeals found, and we argued on appeal, was materially misleading to the jury. It presented a picture of substantial enforcement by the government when in fact the enforcement was flimsy. It was a pretense. It was a sham. There were no penalties assessed against competitors of Malone. There were no penalties assessed against customers and investors of Gulf Coast Waste Authority, the direct state government-owned competitor of Malone Service Company.
What were the circumstances surrounding the admission of this redacted exhibit?
Well, initially, we could go back to the motion for summary judgment that was filed by the state and then denied by the trial court on the basis of whether or not these penalty amounts would come in. And at the very beginning of the trial, there was a motion in limine filed by the government. And one of the points in the motion in limine was an effort to keep out all of the penalty amounts sought and assessed by the government for similarly situated companies. And this included the penalty amounts and the 100-150 page defendant's exhibit 45. At the motion in limine, the court indicated a leaning toward excluding all of this evidence, and in fact, when it was offered, it was excluded upon objection by the government that penalty amounts in no form or fashion should be admitted, even though we had a valid discriminatory enforcement defense pleaded and were in the process of attempting to prove it.
Why? So did you offer the, excuse me, did you offer the exhibit?
The exhibit was offered by the defense in support of its discriminatory enforcement case.
So you had the option of either offering it redacted, option as presented by the trial court, of either offering it redacted or not offering it at all.
There were two purposes in offering Defendant's Exhibit 45.
Whatever the purpose is, that was a choice that you had.
That was a choice that we had.
And you chose to offer it in redacted form while preserving your objection to the redaction.
That's correct. There was another purpose in offering Defendant's Exhibit 45 in addition to the minimal penalty amounts that were shown in there. The other purpose...
And I didn't mean to cut you off on that purpose. What was it?
The other purpose was to establish another part of our discriminatory enforcement defense, which was the selective enforcement, which also showed, by virtue of the omission of certain companies' names from that law, that they were not being enforced against at all.
Who put this law together? Who's
the Texas Water Commission, Your Honor.
Was this a record that's ordinarily kept in the course of ordinary business there?
Yes, it was offered as a business record of the Texas Water Commission that showed the enforcement taken by the Texas Water Commission against polluters in this area.
So that the Water Commission has total control of the compilation and putting together.
That's correct.
Of this exhibit.
Yes, that is correct.
Why should there be a defense of discriminatory enforcement? Why isn't that a policy matter for that branch of government to make?
The genesis of the discriminatory enforcement defense comes from both the Constitution of the United States and from the Constitution of the State of Texas.
In other words, due process. Is that what?
Due process and equal protection, both.
Why shouldn't that be a matter commended to the decision of the trial judge as a matter of law rather than one of fact for the jury?
The reason that it has been held to be a question of fact for the jury is because it is so fact-based. There are many facts that have to be proven in order to establish discrimination.
But the facts here are undisputed. The document shows what it shows.
In addition to simply the fact of discriminatory enforcement or selective enforcement, which I believe was established in this case as a matter of law, you also have to establish, if you're not a member of a suspect class, that there was improper purpose or improper motivation by the state in connection with the discriminatory enforcement action taken against the defendant. And I believe that that, too, is a fact-specific area that needs to be gone into.
And so basically, in a general charge, you would just ask the jury, was the defendant in this case denied due process? And then you would define what discriminatory enforcement amounts to.
What discriminatory enforcement amounts to, as well as equal protection.
Doesn't that strike you as odd that a jury would be asked to find whether due process or equal protection rights were being denied?
Well, the issue, as I understand it, when it's submitted to the jury, it's not submitted to you find that the due process rights or the equal protection rights of the defendants have been violated in this case. It goes into, do you find that the government in this case has discriminatorily enforced these regulations against this defendant or these defendants, and then the discriminatory enforcement elements are defined for the jury.
Counsel, you don't have a discriminatory defense in criminal cases. Why should we have it in civil penalty cases or environmental cases like this?
Well, as I understand it, and I'm not well versed in it, there is a possibility of a discriminatory enforcement defense that can be brought in criminal cases if they in fact prove, and there's a case out of the Southern District that I believe was written by Judge McDonald.
I'm interested about Texas Court of Criminal Appeals. What have they written on this issue?
I do not know what the Texas Court of Criminal Appeals has written on that issue. I was speaking only to the defense of discriminatory enforcement under the U.S. Constitution, and I believe that there has been held to be a defense of that nature in habeas corpus proceeding by criminal defendants under the U.S.
So basically you're arguing for some sort of sentencing guidelines.
No, I'm not arguing sentencing guidelines.
Well, if you're asking to be allowed to tell the jury what other polluters have been fined, as opposed to the penalty that they're going to be, that the jury's going to be asked, aren't you in fact not inviting the jury to compare sentences or fines that have been administratively assessed by the administrative agency or courts in order to gauge the parameters or the limits of the fine that they're to assess? And is that not sentencing guidelines?
In presenting the defense of discriminatory enforcement, particularly in this case, we were not asking the jury to look at other penalties to determine what penalties should be assessed in this case. An instruction can go to the jury once that evidence is admitted.
Well, what is the purpose of allowing the, the monetary fine or to get this information from the jury? What is the purpose of it?
The very heart of the issue is to show that in this case, where the Texas Water Commission and the government has as much control as they do over the amount of penalties that are going to be assessed in an enforcement action, and you combine that with the fact that we believe this action, the whole purpose of it was improperly brought, that the motivation for bringing this action was not the environment. I think the record is fairly clear on that fact, that in terms of harm to the environment, there, it was minimal, if at all.
Well, the jury held against you on that. I mean, right down the line, you lost all those issues before the jury.
Well, what we lost in that respect certainly was the amount of the penalty that was assessed. But we believe that the penalty amounts go to the very heart of the issue of discriminatory enforcement in terms of the control exercised by the Texas Water Commission, the amounts that they sought and obtained against other companies similarly situated, customers and investors of Gulf Coast Waste Authority, which is a direct competitor of Malone. We also believe that pertinent to this issue was the fact that the government in this case was seeking the maximum penalty in a lawsuit, which is a highly unusual move to begin with, that they even file a lawsuit. And the record bears that out in the enforcement log that was admitted in that connection.
Why is that not a fair game if they, from their perspective, you are the worst polluter in the area?
Well, that's an important point, Your Honor, because we were not the worst polluter in the area. Defendant's Exhibit 1, which was admitted, was a press release prepared by the Texas Water Commission that had a comparative analysis of polluters in the area. And it showed very clearly that Malone Service Company, in the Texas Water Commission's opinion, was small in comparison to the other polluters identified on that three-page document. And it also showed, with the other evidence of discriminatory enforcement, that the polluters identified as large, several of them at least, had not been fined, had not been penalized, had not been sued, had not had an injunction brought against them to attempt to cease them from doing business entirely, and then never pursued, although publicized statewide.
Counsel?
Yes.
Most of these other cases were in the form of settlements. Most of the penalties imposed or non-penalties imposed were in the form of settlement. In any case of any kind, of any nature, prosecution or the petitioner will proceed based upon the strength of the case that it has. Why is it evidence in one case that the strength of other cases may not have weighed as heavily as this one? Your adversary here says, we did this way because we had a good, solid case on them and we wanted to hit them hard. That's not selective prosecution. That's moving forward based on the strength of your case. Now, how is that selective prosecution?
It is selective prosecution standing
no,
alone.
If I go in and prosecute a case where you don't have the evidence, you don't have it as hard, you don't have it as solid, and you can't make as good a case, as good an argument, or present the documentation that you can in another case. The one where you've got the strength is the one where you go. The others, you do the best you can through negotiations and settlements. Even if it's just
the coercive effect of putting them through settlement negotiations and letting them know they got your attention?
Well, I think your question has two subparts to it, and I think one is prosecutorial discretion, which obviously exists, it's allowed, and no one's disputing that. But when it gets into the point where there is evidence that large polluters are not being prosecuted.
What evidence? You cited a newspaper article or a press release.
It was a document by the Texas.
However, that's not evidence of the weight of the cases that they might be able to make on those other parties listed. All that is a press release. That's not evidence in a particular case. It says, hey, this is what we believe. This is how we assess. And if you go take each one of those cases and each one of the enumerated parties and analyzed each case, they may well not have the evidentiary backup to proceed against some of the others and more severe violators, more blatant violators. But they may against you. You put this case in the rumble seat because you can't make those other cases, or do you go with what you have?
Well, that standing alone is not going to establish the constitutional defense of discriminatory.
Counsel, will it not, though, open, as Mr. Berwick suggested, the whole question to the jury of whether settlement was attempted in your particular case and what the details of settlement offers and counteroffers may have been?
No, I don't believe that it does open up the door to settlement discussions in our particular case.
Surely the state is going to be entitled to explain, once this information comes in, why it chose to settle one of the other cases.
I think the state should be put to the burden of proving in this case why in instance after instance after instance large polluters were not penalized. Absolutely.
But the state does have an opportunity to come in and explain that as to each of those cases.
Absolutely.
And so if it can explain it as to each of those cases, don't you open up the question of why it chose not to settle your case and get into the settlement negotiations that may or may not have occurred before trial?
I don't think that would be admissible. I don't see that as an issue, and I don't think those discussions would come
out. Well, I think I know your answer, but assuming we accept your approach concerning the admissibility of these other actions that in your case with the state, if an individual who claims to have been harmed from the alleged contaminated groundwater or the hazardous waste sludge brings an action against your company for injuries, shouldn't they be entitled to show other settlements that you may have made with other similarly situated people as it relates to any action the jury should take with reference to gross negligence?
No, because that would go to the issue of liability, and I think Rule 408 clearly excludes that. What we're talking about here is
I'm not talking about liability. I'm talking about the extent to which the jury is asked to be the conscience of the community with regard to setting a level of exemplary damages.
In terms
penalty.
Of punitive damages?
Yes. Why wouldn't it be admissible against Malone Service Company that whatever the settlement amounts had been with other similarly situated persons are penalties that may have been assessed by other juries in the form of gross negligence or exemplary damages against Malone?
Well, I think in your hypothetical, clearly there's no government agency involved in terms of the discriminatory enforcement of the regulation or the law itself, so that the jury looking at the penalty amount, of course, has no constitutional bearing at all in that case.
Still based on equal protection grounds, isn't it? That same basis for the discriminatory enforcement defense, as you call it, is based upon equal protection, which would support the admission of other similar cases generally, wouldn't it?
That's correct.
What would be the effect of an affirmative answer to your discriminatory enforcement issue in this case?
If the jury were to find that discriminatory enforcement occurred in the prosecution of these actions, there would be no civil liability.
There'd be
it
no
is a complete defense.
There'd be no liability?
Yes.
It wouldn't just affect the amount of penalties to bring them in line with the other similar cases which you've attempted to introduce into evidence. It would be a complete bar to any liability.
That is correct.
If that's the case, then how does a government agency ever shift? If you've had a situation where a regulatory agency has basically been run by those that it regulated, has been under the complete domination of those who are involved, to take a hypothetical, with polluting the environment. How is the agency ever to shift and begin doing the job that it was originally enforced with doing if a new governor comes into office, a new agency head wants to change the course of policy?
The issue there goes, I believe, to the motivation in prosecuting the suit in the first case, and that's what's so critical about the evidence that we attempted to admit in the trial court and that the Court of Appeals found should be admitted, including the penalty amount.
But want a new Texas or a new county attorney and take it in the environmental area or health care or consumer protection or whatever, always be faced under your argument with the sins of the predecessor?
Oh, not at all. A new Texas, in a perfect world, obviously, would bring the action for proper purposes. They would be properly motivated.
But you're not suggesting that the only evidence you want to get in is evidence of prosecutorial indiscretion with reference to that particular prosecutor, are you? You're not suggesting that if this action is to be brought today, we only look at what the Water Commission has done under its new appointees and not under the old appointees?
Not at all. What I'm suggesting is that in the defense of discriminatory enforcement, what you look at is what is the motivation behind the agency or the government agency involved in this case in bringing this action. And what have they done with similarly situated companies? If they've brought it for an improper purpose, and if part of that proof shows with similarly situated companies that it was brought for an improper purpose, then the defense exists, obviously, and you're entitled to offer the relevant evidence to that defense.
Counsel, even if you're right and this evidence is relevant and it is admissible, don't you still have to prove an abuse of the trial court's discretion under Rule 403 to show that the trial court abuses discretion in excluding this evidence based upon other considerations like confusion of the issues, undue consumption of time, and that those sorts of issues set out in Rule 403?
Those elements are pertinent. They have to be established, and I think that, in fact, when the Court of Appeals ruled that the exclusion of the penalty amount on the enforcement law not only resulted in us not being able to prove our defense of discriminatory enforcement, but also led to a misleading picture being painted to the jury as to the legitimacy of the enforcement actions taken by the state in this case, that for that reason also the penalty amount should have come in.
Is this the only evidence of discriminatory enforcement that was before potentially could have been before the jury?
No, it was not. We had several pieces, we believe, that fit the puzzle. The two big items of discriminatory enforcement evidence that were excluded by the trial court included the enforcement law, which have these penalty amounts of zero listed in them.
What evidence of discriminatory enforcement was before the jury?
Before the jury was the fact that the Gulf Coast was an agency of the state, that Gulf Coast was a direct competitor of Malone Service Company, that there were several companies listed on the press release and the information maintained by the Texas Water Commission that in the Texas Water Commission's eyes were large polluters, whereas Malone was a small polluter. The big evidence that was excluded by the trial court, obviously, is these penalty amounts we've been discussing, as well as the business records of Gulf Coast, which were offered, that showed that several of these large polluters and people that either no enforcement had been taken at all or the enforcement taken against them had resulted in zero penalties were also customers and investors of Gulf Coast.
So there was some evidence of discriminatory enforcement before the jury. Really what you're complaining about was the exclusion of the disparity in penalties. Is that correct?
The second set of documents that I just discussed, which was the Gulf Coast business records, which was the final linking piece of evidence that linked the customers and the investors in Gulf Coast, which against which no enforcement had been taken on the enforcement minimum, was not allowed before the jury. The Court of Appeals found that this evidence should also be admitted, and I believe that by the point of error that's been granted and is before this court, the Court of Appeals decision on the error in excluding that evidence is not before the court.
Any other questions? Thank you, counsel.
As one reads the Court of Appeals opinion, and specifically the language which speaks about the deleted penalty information possibly causing a jury verdict far out of line with other offenders, one can see what the Court of Appeals had in mind. In effect, I honestly think that Justice Gonzalez's analogy to sentencing guidelines was perfect, although it had not occurred to me up to that moment. The name of the game in any enforcement work, be it environmental or enforcement of the law against rape and murder, is deterrence. The enforcing entity has to seek to punish those who violate the law. Therefore, it's important to the state to get some big hits. And in the past, incidentally, as the unredacted DX1 will show, we have gotten some big hits through settlement. We settled one case for $1 million, for example. It's not all low numbers and zeros. In addition, we have tried cases in the past further and gotten some decent-sized verdicts. None like this one. This was a record.
If you were using this proceeding to help Gulf Coast and its competitive position, as they claim, would that be improper and bar the enforcement?
I'll have to say that the aspect of your question that I find troubling is I don't know exactly what they claim concerning help Gulf Coast. Your Honor, they say in their brief that Gulf Coast was a state agency, and therefore the state was trying to, by helping Gulf Coast, help itself. Now, one problem is this. Years and years ago, the Texas legislature passed a statute that created Gulf Coast and that gave it a special status vis-a-vis waste control in the Gulf Coast area. It further included in that statute and in other statutes passed about the same time favoritism for what's called regionalization of waste collection and treatment. And there was an actual state policy that favored making, instead of having a lot of little dischargers or polluters and a lot of little discharges, that favored having a regional plant. Or regional plants. And Gulf Coast Waste Disposal Authority, indeed, was the kind of entity which was well set up for regionalization. So in the early 70s, this did occur. I mean, the state, in that sense, state law helps Gulf Coast. If that's what the Malones mean, then no, that would not be a defense to prosecution. No, it would not. Nor would it be a defense, I would say, if their theory of helping Gulf Coast in the brief were their correct theory. Their theory has been something of a moving target. But their theory in the brief is that Gulf Coast is the state, Your Honor. The state doesn't get one penny of revenues from Gulf Coast. The state has its revenues going into its treasury. Gulf Coast has its money. And there's no sharing between the two, Your Honor.
If for whatever reason Gulf Coast is polluting and Malone is polluting and the state, for whatever reason, decides to help Gulf Coast and to not help Malone and to use this proceeding to do it, would that be improper? Would that be a defense to this proceeding?
If there were proven bad faith, and I think I would say further, if the Malones were a member of the suspect class, then I would concede that the answer is yes.
I would have to concede that. Yes.
So you However, say the reason their claim fails is because they're not a member of the suspect class?
Among others, yes.
Because
sir.
They've alleged the rest.
I mean, the way I would like to see the law of Texas be is like federal law. And incidentally, I'd like to see it handled procedurally the way it's handled in federal cases, which is pre-trial. It's a decision for the judge. It would not be a decision for the jury. As best I read the federal criminal cases, that's correct. And that's the way I think. Texas law that allows them to knit up whatever pattern of discrimination they wish leads to situations exactly like this. They had one pattern in their pleadings, they had one pattern in their summation, and now in their briefs they say the pattern is that the state was trying to help itself because Gulf Coast is the state, because it's a quasi-governmental entity. May I take 30 more seconds to say what a nightmare this would be if other people's penalties were able to come in. I think that the amicus curiae briefs make the point very well. There is a very likely, if this court decides that other people's penalties are relevant to the discriminatory enforcement defense, that same rule, it would seem to me, would have perfect application to criminal cases. Now, anybody, any lawyer, can knit up a pattern. If his client or her client is accused of rape or whatever, they can knit up some kind of a pattern. If they can bring in the sentences that were settled for or that were meted out by juries in the past to other rape defendants, then it's going to be very, very difficult to prosecute cases. In effect, if these things...
Right.
We would have had to retry a lot of cases, Your Honor.
You might not object, however, if this penalty is brought in future cases.
Well, Your Honor, that really makes a point. I mean, how about if the shoe were on the other foot? Suppose we tried to put in the big penalties meted out in the past. The Malone would have laughed pretty hard at that, and I hope the judge would.
Any other questions? Thank you, counsel. That concludes the oral arguments for this morning. The foregoing causes are submitted on briefs and oral arguments, and the marshal will adjourn the court.
Oyez, oyez, oyez. The Honorable Supreme Court of Texas now stands adjourned, subject to call.